Hello and welcome to MLW Confusion. I'm your host, Rob Cameron, bringing you all that you may or may not need to know about Major League Wrestling and its television programming. This week, big shoe tonight. It is War Chamber, or at least War Chamber Part 1, Team MLW versus Team World Titan Federation in our main event, plus a handful of other matches to go over. But before we can even get there, of course, let's talk about the news. First of which, MLW returns to Tampa, Florida, St. Petersburg, actually, despite what some of the advertising says, for Blood and Thunder. That is going to be July 12th at the Coliseum in St. Pete. No match has been announced, but it's July, so I'm not terribly worried about that yet. But get your tickets now. Tickets evidently start at $10, but obviously the good seats are going to cost you a bit more than that. But yeah, so that's July, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have any more information out there. But I do have a batch of luchadores announced for MLW Azteca. That is going to be May 11th at Cicero Stadium in Cicero, Illinois, or as they call it, Chicago. But never mind that. That's just the suburbs, ladies and gentlemen. But the most important thing is we got more names to be announced. So it's a whole batch of folks, like five or six, including part of Cozy Mac's Okamura, Guerrero Maya Jr., Averno, Ultimo Guerrero, and Virus. They are joining the batch of folks already announced, such as our middleweight champion, Místico, El Felino, Barbaro Cavanario, Atlantis Jr., Magnus, and Star Jr. So this is shaping up to be quite the Lucha Showdown, bringing in stars from the past and the present. Gonna be a banger by the looks of it. We'll see how the actual match card shapes up to be. This is going to be heavy on the MLW Azteca versus Selena De Laurentiis Promocionis Dorado. We'll see how that kind of formulates here in a bit. But yeah, so I'm psyched for it. We need more lucha in the United States, and I'm also psyched because I will be there firsthand reporting live. Well, I probably won't be broadcasting live, but I'll be there talking into some sort of baby microphone, having people look strangely at me, and yeah, just generally weirding people out. So pretty much the norm, except now I'm doing it at an MLW event. Anywho, speaking of big events, didn't catch the plug on it at the end because not gonna lie, I'm recording this intro after I did my review for War Chamber, so we'll get to that in just a minute. But you know, cheap plug week, WrestleMania week has been huge for this year podcast, all over the place. Of course, we're dropping stuff for the Urban Wrestling Network. Dropped some stuff Monday. We'll be dropping stuff at least the date of the release of this episode tonight as well. Made an appearance on the Joe Monroe Show. He's doing some big promotional stuff for National Podcasters Appreciation Month. So that was Tuesday night. Yesterday, we dropped my interview with the Marionette Noel Summit. So check that out if you haven't. That's on this page, so you don't have to figure out anything new on there. And then the most fun that wasn't Confusion related was I got to sit in for a WrestleMania panel at the Card Subject to Change podcast. That was this past Wednesday, so check them out on YouTube as well. Both Joe Monroe and Card Subject to Change is on YouTube. And if you, hit up my social medias, head over to the Facebook page specifically. I've been really good about dropping links over there. So that's facebook.com/MLWConfusion, all one word, and you'll get all the links for that stuff. So that being said, I think I got all the plugs out of the way. So we got War Chamber. Let's get down. Let's get ready for it. But of course, first we need to update our refreshments, and by update I mean get refills, buy more cans, get some energy drinks. I don't know, just toss a coin to the Witcher. I'll be back un momento. If you're like me, sometimes you need a pick-me-up to get you through the day. I drink Raise Energy for that pickup. Raise comes in a bunch of different flavors, and more recently, Italian ice, which is great, by the way. And it contains no sugar, so there's no crash after you drink it. And really, like, best of all, if you go through me and go to wetrepsports.com, use my code CASS, you get 15% off your order. So, also, be like Cass, drink Raise Energy. All right, let's get down to it. War Chamber O'Clock, ladies and gentlemen. One of my favorite shows of the year that hasn't happened to be Battle Riot. Joe Dombrowski, Christian Cole, our commentary team for the evening. But however, we are not going to waste too much time with superfluous. There we go. Unneeded, unnecessary backstage things today. This is a very streamlined show until it comes time to set up the cage, so let's jump right into things. Our opening contest is Yunagi Sayaka taking on Jinai Kai with Selena De La Renta for the MLW Featherweight Championship. Okay, so the freelancer Sayaka taking on the homegrown talent in Jinai Kai. Hopefully one of these days MLW talent will get to challenge for the MLW Featherweight Championship. But in the meanwhile, I'm looking forward to a pretty good match to be had. Before the match gets started, though, we cut to earlier in the day. Selena De La Renta calls Cesar Duran unoriginal. Like, just basically notes that she has everything, so she's not even sure what he could offer him. Or he could offer her, because he's supposed to have an offer she can't refuse here tonight, so she doesn't believe him. He's unoriginal, just making things up as we all go along. In the ring, though, we have a feeling out process with Sayaka dodging the big kick. Kit gets a roll-up for two. However, Kai takes over with a batch of different kicks besides that there roundhouse kick. Does lock in the modified dragon sleeper, which she had used to finish off opponents in the past. However, Sayaka kicks out, or fights out. I guess she could kick out too, but it's more of a fight. She's hulking up, ladies and gentlemen. Back elbow and a twisting X-Factor. Big leg drop, brother, gets two count from Sayaka. Gory's special submission is locked into place for a wee bit and just kind of like lets Kai go into a modified face buster. That only gets a two count, though. Kai comes back with some big kicks to slow down the action a little bit. We have a strike battle that then devolves into a kick battle, which technically Sayaka wins, which is crazy go nuts. But out of nowhere, almost like an RKO, Kai hits a half Nelson slam, follows that up with the corner charging roundhouse, and that is it. Your winner, and still MLW Featherweight Champion Jinai Kai. This was a decent match overall, but the end felt really rushed. It just, like, came out of nowhere. Like, Sayaka's getting her shine on, and all of a sudden, full Nelson slam, kick in the corner. And that's it. Just we're done there. Barring that, I did feel it was a decent match overall, decent exhibition of everyone's skills, showing the MLW audience, those who weren't familiar with, such as myself, I'll throw myself under the bus for that one, showing what Sayaka can do in the ring, and obviously she's no slouch. It's just that ending just kind of came out of nowhere, and not, like, in the good way, like, where we're expected, like, the big pop, like, it just, it's like, almost like Ren and Stimpy, the wrestling episode of Ren and Stimpy, where, like, they pointed at the watches, they're like, oh, it's time, and never mind, the Lummoxes are just beating the snot out of Ren and Stimpy, they just, oh, it's time, and take the fall there. So, like, that's what it was, comparatively speaking. But otherwise, barring that, it was a fine match overall. Selena De La Renta actually kind of, like, stayed out of the way until, like, the very end, where she got to gloat with her charge. But otherwise, like, just a straightforward match is great to be seen. Our second match is a pseudo grudge match, as Flop Dalla himself, AJ Francis, takes on Alex Kane. Francis comes out with Mr. Saint Laurent, who joins on commentary for a bit. Francis gets on the mic, insults the crowd, notes that there's like 200 people and 3 brain cells amongst them, something like that. I don't know. I kind of fall asleep when he talks most of the time, because contrary to what some other folks may say, he does not spit fire. Yeah, and so he challenges Alex, he calls out Kane. Kane doesn't come out originally, so he has to, like, insult Kane's mohawk, and that is the final straw for a scheduled match before Kane comes out. Kane, though, does come out like a ball of fire, throwing the forearms at Francis. They're going to fight outside the ring. We get the apron splash, go inside the ring, and Kane tries to set up the much larger Francis up for a Sioux play, which was ultimately a terrible idea because Francis just, like, deadweights him and hits a Sioux play of his own to take advantage for a bit. We go to the corners with repeated splashes. The last one sends Flop flopping over the top rope. He lands on his feet. It was a planned spot, ladies and gentlemen, so that's fine. We're going to fight outside for a bit. Francis almost gives us hope that he's going to not do well, but when he crashes into the ring post. But Kane goes for another suplex that just goes nowhere, allowing Francis to take over. They go inside the ring. Francis is working over Kane's back. However, Kane fires up and hits two suplexes after a spear. Only gets two count off of that. Looks like Kane is going for a German as Mr. St. Laurent gets off commentary, grabs Francis's arms to kind of prevent that suplex from happening. The ref gets distracted by it. Francis hits a low blow on Kane, followed up by a choke slam, and then there's a needless fast count by the referee, too. Like, we're just, like, adding all the layers to, like, WTF, no pun intended, to give Francis the win. And this match was, like, serviceable, in-ring-wise. Like, it wasn't wholly special. They're keeping the feud going because, you know, there's not a clean win here, though... Like, for me, as an Alex Kane fan, I feel like it doesn't look great for him to be taking a loss so soon into his, like, big, like, comeback feud, we'll say, since losing the title. Like, yes, he's been a part of some victories, but, like, one was the six-man tag that he didn't get a whole lot of shine in, and then he had the Bobby Fish match, which was entirely too meh for my liking. But again, like, this is not a feud ender match, so it is what it is. Obviously, Francis can't be taking losses this early into his MLW career as well. So, like, objectively speaking, Kane, I guess, has to take the fall, and the best way to do it is to do the schmozzes, do the overbooked stuff, which I think this was, like, I don't think we needed the fast count on top of the low blow and choke slam, but whatever, man, they can't all be zingers. Following this, like, Alex Kane, and I didn't mention them during the entrance because they were a bunch of nobodies. Like, they were just a bunch of dudes. Alex Kane came out with a batch of folk that they were calling the Bomaye Fight Club, just a bunch of folks dressed in black, pounding on their chests, screaming Bomaye. But there was none of, like, the normal faces who show up for these things. There's no Shug D. There's no, Mr. Thomas was there, obviously. But no Bougie, no O'Shea Edwards, no Faye Jackson. Like, none of the people that are normally associated with Alex Kane came out with them outside of Mr. Thomas, who still acts as a hype man. However, after the match, like, Francis is standing tall in the ring with Mr. St. Laurent. The Bomaye guys hop in the ring, kind of, like, stared Francis down, and then one by one raise a fist in solidarity with Francis and, like, oh my god, the Bomaye was not loyal. I can't believe it. Like, okay. I mean, I believed it. I didn't believe it was going to be Scrubs, though. So, like, AJ Francis has technically taken over a bunch of Florida Bomaye Scrubs. Like, it's not that impressive, ladies and gentlemen. It's like me, like, pointing out a bunch of people, like, on the street saying, like, these are the Confusion fan club. And then, like, and then immediately they put on Dairy Public Radio or Card Subject to Change and, like, go about their day. And they're like, oh no! CZ, you evil wizard! You have taken my crowd away from me. Like, those people weren't mine to begin with. They're just a bunch of randos. And these guys were a bunch of randos, too. So, like, cool beans, I guess. I guess there's Scrub Bomaye following AJ Francis around. Kane is not amused by this, though. Also, while I'm complaining about this, Akira's backstage. He's soon to be on the ground backstage as he is jumped by the calling. He gets his head all wrapped up in barbed wire. Meanwhile, Kevin Diaz is looking to make his MLW debut today, but swerve, bro! Some dude named Brian Brock comes out and takes Diaz out. Brock gets in the ring, lays down an open challenge, demands that somebody come remove him from this ring, and, oh, monkey's paw, bro, swerve. And in another case of be careful what you wish for, here's a wild Mads Kruger with the Sendai Death Squad. It's nice to know you, Brock. Brock, you know, tries to do what he can to fight off everybody. They're brawling around the ring. Meanwhile, the Sendais are in the ring setting up, you know, a door and various weapons in the ring. Kruger busts Brock open by wrapping a chair around Brock's face and then just kicking Brock right in the face off of that. We do eventually make it to the ring, so I guess this is a real match. Though Brock gets a hope spot, he dodges a corner charge. Kruger goes flying into the door, and then Brock hits a lariat. That's not enough to put that big man down. Brock gets a chunk of the door and smashes it onto Kruger's head, and the door, like, literally gets stuck. Like, Kruger's head is poking out the top of it, and Kruger's no-selling it. It has to remove the door himself and adjust his mask accordingly. That just absolutely infuriates Kruger. Choke slam, full Nelson face buster, and it's elementary from there. The Sendai Death Squad have to remove Brock from the ring, as he requested, as Contra stands tall in their one match this here evening. It was what it was. I'm not entirely sure why we needed, like, a double swerve on that one just to have this match. Like, I don't know if it added anything to have this here Diaz get murked just so we could have another jobber come in. And Brock's not a jobber. Like, he's a big dude and, like, kind of a big deal in the Southern Independence, but, like, we have no clue who he is, MLW speaking. Like, he's just a guy who beat up another guy that we didn't know who he was that was a lot smaller than him just to get beat up by Mads Kruger. But otherwise, other than that, it was a serviceable brawl. Like, you know, if I just look at the brawl by itself, it was totally serviceable. It was fine. It was actually enjoyable, despite being a squash. Like, so, you know, that part of it worked, I suppose. It was just some of, like, the booking around it that made it weird. Speaking of jobbers and making things weird, here is Richard Adonis. He is going to be taking on Bad Dude Tito. Luckily, there's no swerves on this one. This is just going to be a straight-up match. As soon as the bell rings, Adonis attacks Tito, and Tito's like, come on! Give me some more. Adonis hits him a couple more times before Tito just has enough and starts launching him hither and yarn across the ring before finishing things up with a choke toss, followed up by the tequila screwdriver. It's not the Steiner screwdriver when Tito does it. It is the tequila screwdriver. And Tito wins. Tito. Tito has a winning record in MLW now, so it's okay for him to challenge for a championship, which is good because he gets on the mic and he, like, he wants gold. He doesn't care if it's Satoshi Kojima. He doesn't care if it's Ricochet Page. He's going after titles, baby. Just doesn't settle on one. So I don't know if he's going after both titles or they just gave him a mic and he went off and then plugged it later on social media. But anyway, the important thing is he has a winning record now, so I'm not going to complain when he gets a title shot. It's not like Jimmy Lloyd getting a title shot or me getting a title shot. You know, this dude's got a winning percentage. After this, my monitor went out for a bit, but I'm told that allegedly a fast food breakfast sandwich had a match against TMDK Youngboy. I suppose it was fine. I could look at social media about it, but I'm not because I'm not that professional. Also, our fast food breakfast sandwich is wanting some gold, which upsets me greatly, and we'll have to come up with a game plan for that option, you know, because I'm not a mature adult about this here situation. Anyway, more importantly, though, backstage, you know it does make me an adult? Watching Cesar Duran. He's going to lay down an offer that Selena De La Renta can't refuse, and of course, like, speculation's running wild. On the UWN, we were looking at like a winner-takes-all kind of situation, like loser leaves town, or maybe even it's a scenario in which Azteca Lucha and Promotion Unesperado merge because there are two things that these people like, and that's violence and money. You know, money makes the world go around, and then maybe they can make more together. But that is not the case. Cesar is laying down the gauntlet for Azteca Lucha. It's going to be a best of series, and whichever promoter's Merck's roster wins the most matches, that promoter will get the key to the richest prize in Lucha. Heavily implied to be the key of Matanza. Cueto, Jeff Cobb, because he did actually make an appearance in MLW, quasi's Matanza, and then just, like, took off the boiler suit and revealed himself to be Jeff Cobb and had a match. But, you know, so that, honestly, for me, was also kind of a letdown, too. Like, man, this thing's getting really negative, and it makes me sad, because I hate being, like, the neckbeard who complains about everything, but... Dude, I have a microphone and I have a complaint, so I guess y'all have to hear it. I'm sorry. I'm not, actually, because I'm just going to keep talking for, like, another 10 minutes at least. But yeah, so that the gauntlet has been set down for Azteca Lucha. That is going to be May 11th in Cicero. They'll call it Chicago, but it's the Cicero suburb. But the important thing is I'll be there to live to just, you know, document what's happened. I'll try to keep a rundown, keep a tally for everyone so we know where we're at. That's also going to be kind of a lie because it's going to be broadcasted live too, so you can do your own tally. Meanwhile, I will be just screaming my head off and then making obscene gestures at the one called Manders should he dare arrive. Anywho. Back to the show. Mads Kruger cuts in. He notes that 2 years he has waited, 2 years he's hidden underground to prepare for this moment. Tonight, MLW is going to be on fire, and tonight is the point in which the flame will be sparked, or sparked will be flamed, or we're just going to burn shit down. All right, evidently this is going to be the intermission part of the show. Christian and Joe Dombrowski are kind of like talking about Místico being the MLW middleweight champion. We are going to go to a previously recorded match from CMLL in Arena Mexico. So they're finally doing something like that we've been asking for a bit now. Like, if your champions are traveling and defending the belt elsewhere, you know, come along, you know, show us that footage. Like, let us know what they've been doing. And tonight they're doing just that, as Místico will be defending the championship against Angel del Oro. So we are going to Arena Mexico as they're setting up the War Chamber. We start things off with a tie-up. Místico takes over with several arm drags, but then it does end with a standoff because, like, you know, lucha arm drags involve a bunch of somersaults. So I guess out of the equilibrium part, like, you know, maybe it's not so horrible in the body. I don't know. I've not taken a, you know, taken a lucha arm drag. We go outside. Tope Suicida by Místico, but he gets cut off on a second attempt. Dropkick to the head by Oro only gets two as Místico is sent outside. Oro is just taking his sweet time, just... dancing around or something, man. Místico has plenty of time to kind of hulk himself up to make a comeback. However, Oro takes to the air with a pair of moonsaults. Two quick pinfalls attempts from Místico only gets two. Oro is sent outside by Místico, and he jumps off the top rope to the arena floor. I think he kind of rocked himself on the process because the referee even went out and, like, Místico had his mask off. So I don't know what was going on out there as, like... the chaos was ensuing. However, Místico does shake it off. Quebrada by Oro gets two. Místico hits a springboard Rana only for two as well. And from that, we're doubling down. Once we wake up, Oro hits a spinning Michinoku driver number two for the two, for just a two count as well. Too many twos in this thing. Solo Spanish Fly by Místico gets two. Proper solo Spanish Fly. Commentary almost got it. That's why Joe is one of the best, because he almost got it. Nobody bothers to get the Spanish flies correctly. But it's a solo Spanish fly. Omi gets two, though. Super play by Oro gets two. And then another Michinoku driver also gets a two count, too. However, Místico speeds things up, spins, flops, and flies. Locks in La Mística to get the submission. your winner and still MLW Middleweight Champion, Místico. After the match, we do get respect between both competitors, so no hard feelings here. It was just a competitive match and, like, you know, quite good. Not quite as fast as you'd expect from some Lucha, but of course they still, like, pulled out all the stops, took to the air, and was just generally, we'll call it, full of grace. So no complaints on this. Probably, like, from a pure wrestling perspective, you know, the match of the night. Like, we could talk about War Chamber, but War Chamber really isn't everybody's cup of tea. So, you know, it could always be in the running, but we'll stop and see. Speaking of War Chamber, it is time. It is time. Are you ready? The cage is set up. There's barbed wire wrapped around the top. There are weapons all over the place. I think it's time for War Chamber. Okay, that was my worst William Regal impression. But yeah, War Chamber is, for those of you not initiated, is basically the MLW version of War Games. This year, they finally got the second ring back, so we're official. The only thing we're missing from the old school stuff is just having that ceiling on there. But there's no crazy rules about DQs or anything like that. It is just two teams of four taking turns until everybody comes in. So, like, the first two people are in the ring for 5 minutes, then one team gets the advantage for 2 minutes before the opposing side gets to even things up, and then we keep doing this with the 2 minute advantage, even things up until all eight competitors are in the ring at the same time. At that point, the match can officially begin, and by that I mean officially end, because at this point now we are going to allow pinfalls and submissions in this here match. As I said, unlike WWE, there is no DQ, so you could escape the cage if you so desire, but you're not really helping your team all that much if you do that. Let's be realistic about it. Anywho, looks like we're going to start off with two of the hard hitters. To be fair, Team MLW's group is like a pair of hard hitters, but we're going to start off with Josh Bishop and Matthew Justice. Bill Alfonso is out randomly with Matthew Justice, and we're just going to brawl around the ring. We're not even going to enter the cage yet until we hit about like the 2 minute mark of the match, but just let the match go anyway, because there's no rules in War Chamber, so who really cares? Alfonso's chucking chairs. Bishop gets mad at Alfonso and yells at him, and just club it away at each other with the weapons. Timer goes off, and it looks like Team WTF has the advantage, which, I mean, that makes sense in, you know, wrestling, to let the heels get the heat for a bit by themselves. Filthy Tom Lawler is out and just makes his way into the cage. Justice tries to, fight off, but the numbers are too much, of course, before the one called Manders comes out to even the odds after 2 minutes. They just go back and forth after this. Davey Boy Smith Jr. is out, and he has Mr. St. Laurent's army helmet and dinking people with that, showing off. Out for Team MLW is Shigeo Ukamura. He comes in and he just, like, forgets to sell. Like, he's not even, like, Ultimate Warrioring or, like, Hogan, where he's like, ugh, and then, like, yeah. Like, he just gets clubbed and does stuff and just keeps going, just ignoring everybody. He's going to get his shit in as well. Where was I when I was complaining about that? So he forgets to sell, but in the meanwhile, takes out the entirety of Team WTF and tries to make Filthy Tom Lawler submit. Somewhere in this process, he hits a nifty stunner DDT combo as well before deciding that he needs to make the UFC guy tap out. Last for Team WTF is Richard Holiday, bringing rarefied air into the War Chamber. He slams the door right on Justice's head as Justice tries to meet him at the door, and he cleans house, hits a big spine buster on the one called Manders, because take that, you filthy cowboy. Everybody is just like kind of half down, and then Filthy Tom's just in the ring just trying to get a WTF chant going in between both the rings. Thought that was fun. And finally, though, the world champion enters the match, and now the match beyond begins. Everybody but the one called Manders is getting in machine gun chops. Evidently, he forgot his spot and had to bolt over to get his in at the very last moment. Way to go, Manders. You're late to save your friends, and now you're late for a big spot, too. Meanwhile, Matthew Justice decides he needs to jump on things, because that's what he does. He goes up to the top of the cage. He's literally sitting on the barbed wire, the crazy bastard, and then jumps on everybody with a big splash, taking everybody out. When everyone wakes up, we are going to square up 4-on-4, just start clubbering away. Weapons are now being liberally used once again. Josh Bishop hits the DVD on Matthew Justice through a table. Davey Boy Smith Jr. uses a Northern Lights suplex to put Manders through a door. And that was interesting. I don't see too many Northern Lights suplexes, I mean, just used in general. But then just, I'm going to put someone through the table with this Northern Lights. Just, whatever. I'm not going to argue with Davey Boy because, one, it was effective. Two, like, if you go to my TikTok, there, I have a picture of a half-crazed David Boy Smith Jr. with blood dropping off his teeth. Like, I'm not messing with that guy. But in the meanwhile, in ring number one, I guess we'll call it, Holiday screams out, Holiday Cutter, hits the cutter on Kojima, followed up by David Boy Smith hitting a power bomb on Kojima for the first pinfall attempt of the match. Only gets two, though. There's a malfunction in the junction as Bishop accidentally spears David Boy Smith through the board. Whoops. No more David Boy Smith to worry about, I guess. On the other side of the ring, we get stereo spears by the Second Gear crew, and then the Second Gear crew set up a batch of tables in the ring. There's some fighting in the corner, because it looked like they were going to go for a splash originally, but everybody woke up. Filthy Tom gets hoisted up on the one called Manders' shoulders, and Manders is like on the second rope while this is going on. Justice is on top of the cage again, hooks up Lawler, and they hit a modified Steiner, like an avalanche Steiner DDT through the announce table. And that was crazy go nuts. Like, somebody goes to check on him to make sure Filthy Tom is dead, while the rest of us filthy fanatics, cry ourselves to sleep after that. But that is not the end of the match, ladies and gentlemen. No, we got to go back over to the other side of the ring, where Mr. Saint Laurent has a bag of cocaine to give to Richard Holiday. But before Holiday can use it and hulk up, Kojima just hits him with a lariat, and that's it. That is how War Chamber ends. Lariat from Kojima. Team LLW stands tall. And man, like, I get it. We want Kojima to take the fall, but like, they literally killed Tom Lawler. That should have been the end of the match right there. But like, other than that, like, actually, this is probably one of the better war matches, war chambers they've had in quite some time, just because the competitors have had time to have the space to move around the ring. Like, the previous war chambers have only been in one ring, and so getting all eight guys is kind of like a task to be had in and of itself. But with the two ring setup, they had the space to move and be creative and just not trip all over each other. And it definitely showed. So I, like, outside of the end, I was not disappointed. But just because this is the end of the match doesn't mean the show is over. The music, the dulcet tones of Contra hit the airwaves as the Sendai Death Squad come out with Mads Kruger. They surround the ring. Kruger eventually gets the door torn off the war chamber, and just pandemonium breaks out. Sendai are climbing the cage, they're running through the doors, just overwhelming our babyface team. Ikuro Kwan is back with MLW, or at least back with Contra. He's around kicking people in the head. He eventually shoots the poison mist in the face of Matthew Justice. Not to be outdone, Mads Kruger has a fireball that he's going to throw at the one called Manders, and everybody's dead at the hands of Contra. The show goes off the air with the black flag of Contra being hung from the war chamber as we fade to black. That was utterly chaotic. I don't necessarily disapprove of the end. I would still like to see less Sendai Death and more, like, named members of Contra, but we're getting there with the return of Ikuro Kwan. But otherwise, like, I felt war chamber as a whole was kind of a mixed bag of, like, weird booking decisions and weird little, like, letdowns, and that kind of, like, drew me out of some of the matches, because, like, some of the matches were really good, like, the Featherweight Championship, really good, but just this random ending that didn't seem to, like, fit in with the narrative of the story, like, that was weird. Cesar Duran's big announcement was kind of a wet fart, I'm not gonna lie, like, unless there's, like, a tangible, like, we're going to see some variation of Mataza, or they're going to explain what this other key does, like, key means next to nothing to me, like, especially since we've not referenced the evil twin in quite some time. Yeah, the ending of War Chamber was kind of a wet fart too. Like they could go from this big spot, like a high spot, to just a lariat. And like no offense intended to Kojima, because like he is the lariat. He is the lariat successor to Stan Hansen. And also I'm a proud member of the Bread Club. However, like to go from DDTing someone through a table from like halfway up the cage to just hitting a lariat is kind of a letdown. But I'm curious to see where we're going with Contra, since they have, officially at this point, declared war on MLW. We're getting some names going on there. So, I mean, it's a mixed bag of a show. 50 out of 100, 5 out of 10. I don't know, maybe 6 out of 10, because like we did get, some footage from Arena Mexico with Místico, the title being defended down there. So that was always a plus. Plus, that match was really good as well. Bad Dude Tito gets to earn a title shot by being over 500, so that's also a good thing too. But whatever. Tell me what you think. Just hit me up in the comments section, hit me up on social media. If you need to know where those things are, you can check out the descriptor below, or just stay tuned because I'll plug all the socials and tell you all the best ways to support this here small podcast in the meanwhile. So, hey, hope you enjoyed it. It's War Chamber. We got something, War Chamber Part 2 in a couple of weeks. So we got the calling and the response going on there. And in the meanwhile, I'll catch you all next week. MLW Confusion is a weekly podcast that is written and performed by Rob Kammer and is hosted by Spotify for Podcasters. MLW Confusion is part of the Urban Wrestling Network, and you can check them out on the Underground Rundown on YouTube at Urban Wrestling NW. Background music for this section is Ruined My Day, performed by Alan Schroeder. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends, family, and enemies. Leaving a review is also helpful, as word-of-mouth advertisement is very important for small podcasts. My social media links can be found in the descriptor, but the Twitter and Instagram are at the Nova of Cass, that is TheNovaOfCass, and Facebook is at MLW Confusion, all one word. If you'd like to support monetarily and help upgrade my equipment and etc., please check out the tip jar at ko-fi.com/Casanova. Or if you prefer some more bang for your buck, go to patreon.com/Casanova. That is CassOnova. Whereas for as little as $2, backers get access to the podcast early and without those pesky ads, plus other exclusive content. So join the crew that is headed up by Keith Wynn, Alan Schroeder, The False Prophet, Alexander McCarthy, and Left Tendo, and check it out. You can also find t-shirts, coffee mugs, and other merch at the Confusion Podcast store on Teespring. Links will be below. For business inquiries such as ads and sponsorships, please email at rzkammerer, that is K-A-M-E-R-E-R, @comcast.net. Thank you for listening.